You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley-Davidson, home of the biggest selection of Harley-Davidsons in the Midwest. I-29 south of the airport or shop online at WorthHarleyDavidson.com. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
1-2, Jackson at the belt, check Smith at second. The pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep right field. That one back. And we are tied.
Swing and a line drive out towards right center. And it's going to touchdown for a hit. In the score is Taylor. Betts to second. He slides in. And it's an RBI double for Mookie Betts. The Dodgers lead it 6-5.
2-2 again. And a swing and a liner into center. A base hit. Correa around third on his way home. He will score. Around a third on the play is Gurriel. Jason Castro with an RBI single. And the Astros have taken the lead here in the top of the ninth.
And now to advocate for more of that good old human element in baseball, especially in the postseason, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you for joining us here on another beautiful day. Doesn't get any better than the fall weather we've had here lately. Come on by and check it out for yourself. Great time to get out on the lot if you're in the market for a new or used vehicle. Robert Brogdon, Buick GMC has you covered. Family owned and operated for over 25 years. Take advantage of great deals right now at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, and of course also at their sister store, Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. You can take advantage right now of the number one volume GM dealer in the state of Kansas in Kansas City. Why are they number one? Well, you're going to get the best car buying experience. You're going to get the best deal on your trade, best deal on your financing. They have a great, great lineup of vehicles right now. The largest volume GMC dealer in the entire Midwest and recipient of the 2020 GMC Mark of Excellence Award between both Brogdon stores. A huge selection of new certified pre-owned and used vehicles in all makes and models. 0% APR financing for 72 months available on all new Buick models and GMC Terrain and Acadia models. The redesigned 21 GMC Yukon, it is now back in stock. There's a beautiful one right up front. Can't have it. Just got sold. Come on by and see for yourself. No, you can't have it. Not that one right there. I was just told it was sold. I was like, how about that one? And they said, you can't have it because we just sold it. I think as I was pulling in, I saw the people who were buying it. Beautiful Yukon XL. You can come check it out for you. Also a great selection of light-duty and heavy-duty trucks for your business. If your truck is your office, Robert Brogdon Buick GMC has you covered. And, of course, their fleet vehicle line. Perfect for anybody who has a lot of vehicles in their business. Special discounts available for military and first responders as well. You can shop them online right now at robertbrogdon.com, the best in the business. We're talking about the number one volume GM dealer in the state, in the metro area, but the number one Buick dealer in the country. It's Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Come see us. We're here today, and we're going to be registering, I believe, for a pair of tickets to the friendly between the U.S. Women's National Team tomorrow. They are taking on Korea, so a chance for you to come on by and take advantage of the opportunity to go to the soccer match tomorrow.
Nice.
I can say a little love for my friends at Tickets for Less. I got tickets for the match from Tickets for Less.
Sweet.
I would love have won two free tickets, although I got a great deal at Tickets for Less. I didn't get free.
Nah.
Because, you know, that's not how it works.
But you got the best deal.
I did. I got the best deal.
And you know you got tickets.
Second to whoever's going to win the pair of free tickets here.
And you know you got tickets.
Technically not eligible to win. So I couldn't have won anyway.
Paren Cetro couldn't possibly come away with those.
No, I don't think it was going to work. I'm a stickler for the rules, Kay. You know that.
I do.
A stickler. A stickler for the rules. That's how I like to roll. So, we digress. We'll see what happens, who ends up, getting the tickets, but we're going to be giving away a pair of tickets to the friendly tomorrow between the U.S. Women's National Team, best women's team in the world, is going to be playing over at Children's Mercy Park. Why wouldn't you go?
No reason. The sky's blue enough in my book. The sky will be blue enough for that.
Okay, good. I'm glad. I'm glad we've got
the K-Dog Sky Index.
Petro Siebel, Jed Marshall back at the station running the operation as we take you through what will be a very busy day. Today is Big 12 Media Day. Travis Goff, the athletic director for the Kansas Jayhawks, will join us coming up a little bit later on this hour. Todd Lebo with us to play the feud. We'll also get some Lebo sounds. SEC conference call today. I know we listened to quite a bit of that. Quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Eli Drinkwitz.
Interesting and then not interesting in one area that you would have liked it, and that's Coach O. They kind of tiptoed around that and then sent him packing early.
I may or may not have been talking to somebody else at the same time. I won't divulge the industry secrets. I'm not going to tell you entirely how the sausage is made. But while talking to one person, then muting and listening to another, not the easiest way to digest Coach O. But, yeah, 10-minute slot, he did 5 minutes. Nobody's like, dude, does it suck coming to work knowing you're out? How much recruiting will you do? It seemed like there were a lot of questions that could have been fired. Yeah. I figured, I was like, well, I'm not going to jump on there. One, I was talking to somebody else at the same time that I was trying to listen to that. But I'm like, I assume that all of Louisiana is going to have many questions for him.
Yeah.
It turns out they don't. They're pretty much done with you once you come to an agreement. They don't really care how you got there. I would have thought there'd have been a lot of questions on that.
Well, there was one early, and we'll hear this later. Someone did ask him, you know, is it strange? What do you think of coaching so many games when you know you're leaving? And he didn't really offer much of an answer and not much of a follow-up. And then we also included the last question, which was asked 4 minutes and 10 seconds after he was introduced. Because they got done and they went, all right, coach, you're done. Click. It wasn't, hey, any more calls in queue? Nope.
Yeah.
See you, coach.
Well, I think everybody in that, I think the SEC Media Day is very much a good old boy network. And so if it's like there's hostility, not only do they not want to ask a question, everybody involved just wants it to go away as quick as possible.
Yeah.
It just means more. When you're one of us.
I don't think it does. It just means less sometimes.
And it's going well. Then it just means more.
Mm-hmm. When it's not, it just means help.
Not so much when, you know, it doesn't mean more, I guess, when, you know, you're involved in numerous scandals that everybody's talking about. Then it doesn't mean so much.
Good day for drink. He was fairly happy.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you be?
Because he's got a bye? Is that what you're getting at?
And because he inked the number one wide receiver in the country last night.
Yes.
Couldn't really talk about it, but that was – As I sat there and watched this, first of all, I was thinking at about 6:30, are they ever going to do this? And then I thought, he's going to take Georgia. I'm just going to take Georgia. And then he reached over and grabbed the Georgia and Alabama hats, held them up, and I'm like, he's taking Mizzou. As soon as he grabbed both hats, I'm like, he's tossing both those aside and taking Mizzou, and he did. So that's a big get.
Yeah, okay.
That's a big get for the program, fencing in the state and getting the top wide out.
I do agree. I do agree. I will say this. I think the big question now, though, is do they hang on to him? They got a lot better chance since he's a Missouri kid. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about getting – you know, we saw Kansas land a bunch of kids out of Louisiana, only for as time rolled on, Louisiana said, okay, LSU said, okay, here's an offer. Oh, yeah, I mean, sorry, I'm going to LSU now. This kid's from Missouri, which gives you a lot more reason to believe, and adds to an already impressive recruiting class.
Yeah, number 7 quarterback. He's got, I think, a top 15 running back. Couple of top 20, an offensive, a defensive lineman, I think the number 12 corner or safety coming in. So it's a nice start.
Anyway, we'll hear more about that with Todd Lebo coming up in our next hour. Frank Bohl, the godfather of Kansas City sports, will join us. We'll get some Frank opinions during that time. George Chiruri from Pro Football Focus will get his opinions. He, the partner of Eric Eager on the PFF forecast, which is a great podcast if you love football, if you love gambling, if you love kind of the numbers to football, then you'll love the PFF forecast. George, I want to talk Chiefs with. We'll talk some NFL with, but I want to talk Chiefs with him because he's not a Chiefs fan.
Mm.
Right? Eric, there's some fandom in there.
Yeah.
This is just raw numbers without a fan.
Unencumbered by rooting interest.
Right?
I like that. And I mean, to Eric's credit, he is a fan, but he doesn't let, like us, he doesn't let his rooting interest at any point affect his analysis because he can't afford to. His number one goal is to be accurate, and he knows if that doesn't happen, people don't seek out your product. So even though Eric is a bit of more of a Chiefs fan than George, he, to what I've noticed, he doesn't let it get in the way of his numbers. And plus, numbers don't generally have rooting interests anyway. They're not, math isn't biased. So,
finally, stick somebody willing to stick up for Eric Eager.
Yes, I'm proud of you. The first person ever.
What is the threat that Derrick Henry presents for the Kansas City Chiefs?
I feel less uneasy facing the most devastating threat at running back than I do the most devastating threat at quarterback. I think they scored a lot of points against him in Tennessee a couple years ago, but he wasn't a huge factor in that playoff game that they played later on that year. I think there's certainly it's a threat, but I don't think it's. I think it's what he allows the other players on their offense to do. I mean, if you can blunt him at some point, it makes their play-action game a little less effective. So I guess in to that degree, he does help their passing game. But I don't think he's a guy that you come into a game. If you have an offense who can score, I don't think you sweat what Derrick Henry can do if you can put up 34 points.
Yeah. I think this is a game that the reality is – you want to play from in front, right? The key to beating Derrick Henry is not chasing the Titans, not allowing them to feel like they can just sit back and pound the rock.
Mm-hmm.
Darren Smith asked Andy Reid today about the challenge of stopping a back like Derrick Henry.
Hey, he's a great kid. He's a good football player. To think that he's carrying the ball as much as he is and year after year he's putting up these numbers, it's crazy. So, and he's a great player. So are you going to hold him to no? No, that's not what's going to happen. He's going to get his yards, and then you just have to limit it the best you can. You got to tackle him. He's a big man, but you got to tackle him. And our guys know that. You know, they've got a good offense. They base it around 22. So they got a great play action game, and that comes off of action to him. And so yeah, we've got to be ready for all that.
Are you going to hold him to
no? No.
What? Where? Nothing?
Yeah, nothing.
Where was that word that he I'm just let sure. trail off going?
I'm not sure.
Are you going to hold him to
no? Hold to no.
Yeah, it's like, what was that? Did I just get a?
I think so. Shamalama.
A little bit of Axl Rose there. Did you?
Shananana.
Did that just roll in there? I wasn't sure. Look, I think the storyline is going to be, can the Chiefs stop Derrick Henry? And I think the answer is you don't have to.
I think where he could hurt you is what he has done a little bit. I think it's five consecutive games. He's had a 70-yard touchdown run or something along that line. If, to use one of Eric Eager's, he is really good at coming up with little phrases, maybe a
well, I'll tell you what. Do you have a bit of a man crush with the Eric Eager?
No,
there's a lot of praise going his way here from you today.
He's deservedly so, but He uses this in describing how defenses, the box they forced the Chiefs into. And he says they forced them to cross the street several times on the way to the end zone. And I think if you force the Titans with Derrick Henry to cross the street several times, I think you can stop them. What you don't want is for him to bust it from 70 out and truck it in like he did the other night, like he's done in each of the last five games.
Don't give up the big plays. Yeah. Is that the Curtis Sewell statement here?
He can run for 143 yards. If his longest run is 22, I think you're probably in pretty good shape. If his longest run is 77 and then has another 50 or another 20 or whatever, that's what you want to avoid is that home run play. Force them to move the chains with him on the ground. At some point, they're going to turn it over, or they're going to keep the ball so long that their offense just doesn't score points per possession or points per minute, and you can beat them that way with more of a quick strike approach. That's the fear of Derrick Henry is him plowing through. And maybe that's a big thing to fear with this defense recently, but that's the one fear is him busting the long one and just getting seven like that.
I'm not as worried about. I mean, listen, I think that's. A distinct potential. It's a real possibility that's going to happen because when I thought the scariest thing about him was that they at 21.08 miles or 21.8 miles per hour, they had him as the fastest back this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous. The man has 5,000 yards of wear and tear on him in just like the last year or so. and he now is running faster and carries what listed here at 247 pounds. If he's an ounce, 247 pounds, has carried the football 1,344 times, over 6,600 yards rushing the football. Another, how many catches here? Another 92 catches for 830 yards. So collectively, 1,450 touches of the football, and he's still the fastest guy on the field, or at least fastest running back in the NFL. That's the scary part, right?
Yeah.
And listen, if he's going to get a big play, he's going to get a big play. You don't want it, obviously. But to me, the scary part is that, like, I would tell you that there's a game plan here, and it's leave Chris Jones at D-end. I think most of us would like to see Chris Jones at D-tackle. I think that's the future. I think it's where he's going, is to play D-tackle. I think he'll be more effective, but more effective against the pass rush. I was optimistic. I'm like, well, let's play the big people. Let's keep a couple of 300-plus pounders on the inside and 295-pound Chris Jones on the outside. Let's play bigger people to stop the run would be my mindset as a defensive coordinator, because Derrick Henry's going to get all his between the tackles. And so the fact that Chris Jones hasn't been very disciplined at setting the edge isn't as big a problem, because they're going to run Derrick Henry. They're going to do what they do, which is run Derrick Henry between the tackles. And when I see that he's at 21.8 or 08 or whatever it was, fastest running back in the NFL, I'm like, oh, no, he'll hit the perimeter as well. And so if Chris Jones is not going to be assignment sound and set the edge and turn him up, he's going to be on the perimeter and then running over and trucking corners.
Yeah.
Like, yep. That's one of the things, like, Darrell Williams, I argued with Eric Eager about this last night on our Red, White, and True podcast. Like, he doesn't ever – he wants 80% passes, right? Like, he's picking nits, in my opinion, when it comes to the running backs, right? Like, he didn't like that there was 21 carries for Darrell Williams. In fact, in the fourth quarter, 8 carries for 11 yards, right? He carried it the most in the fourth quarter, which to me is what you do, throw to win, run when you're winning. He wasn't overly effective, but I think there's something to be said. Darrell Williams, people had to come put a helmet on him. They had to drop a shoulder. And particularly the 3 or 4 passes he caught out on the wing, which were really just old-school dump passes to the running back, he made a guy miss, and then he put punishment on people. And while I do get the math and the analytics of everything that's going on, and I'm a big proponent of it, and I think it needs to be listened to and followed and adhered to, but I think there is – I'll go back to Brandon Staley, God's gift to coaching until he blew it against the Ravens.
That's where I was going to go, and you got done, but right. we're going to the same place, Staley's comments about that.
He said, listen – it's a physical game. There's a physicality to it, and the running game allows you to be physical on offense. And I agree. I think that's how it has to work. And so from that standpoint, I think Darrell Williams brought a physicality to this team. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire can do it as well. I think he runs tough, but he's just at 20, 25 pounds lighter than Darrell Williams. He's going to pack less of a punch. He can get the yards. He can get more yards, but I think Darrell Williams is what I would call like a body blow.
Yeah, you weren't sitting there in the fourth quarter sore because you're tackling Clyde Edwards-Helaire all day.
Right.
Darrell Williams is a different situation.
More so than grabbing Mecole Hardman.
Right.
Right? I think there's still an element that he brings to it, but Darrell Williams brings a much bigger one. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a part of the game that you have to get to. And I think that's a big part of what Derrick Henry does. We talked about it. Go back to 2019, the AFC divisional game, where the Titans and Patriots played, and the Titans won. And everybody went on and on and on about how it was Derrick Henry, who rushed for about 200 yards that day. When in reality, if you went back and looked, all the big plays were really made by the passing attack.
Yeah.
And even in building a 17-7 lead against the Kansas City Chiefs in that AFC Championship game, it was like, oh, Derrick Henry. But what was beating them was Ryan Tannehill through the passing game. And then the one thing they did in that game was once they got even, or near even at 17-14, the Titans then couldn't just pound away with Derrick Henry. And that's why I say the biggest approach, the biggest mindset here has to be effective on offense. This is a game to help their defense. They need to be effective on offense, right? They need to play from in front, because I think this defense was built. And can we call anybody a moron for building the Chiefs defense around not winning a game? Not playing a tie game and getting the sack to finish it or being up 1 point, but playing to, you know, building a defense to play up 14 When you have Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, and Travis Kelce, like, if you're going to build a style of defense, do you want to build one that's used that plays effectively, plays its best football from in front? I mean, ideally, you'd like, you know, a great defense can play any style. I disagree. Right? If you're a blitzing defense, if you're an attacking defense, that's what you do. This is a bend but don't break, disguise coverages. Know you're going to have to put the ball in the air because you're chasing our huge number, and we'll get takeaways that way. Now, the pass rush has been non-existent. That has to get better for them to be a part of the equation in winning. Not that you can't win without them. We've seen this team do that, where it just boat races people. But I think, listen, the offense, to make this defensive style work, the offense has to do what it's supposed to do, and that is get up, lead, right? Lead in the game. And I think it gets a lot easier for the defense to look good. Derrick Henry, no Derrick Henry. I think leading is the most important part of the equation for this team.
If you are of that mind and you are the Chiefs, is this one of those things where you try not to do the we're going to double up at the half and try to get both possessions?
No.
Take the ball at first? If your goal is to lead.
Did you not just speak to Eli Drinkwitz and hear about the swing eight?
The swing eight? But if you truly are of the mindset that we're best served by getting up 14-0, what's the best way to get up 14-0? Take the ball first and put it in the end zone would be what I would think. So, they're not going to do that. But that would be, I almost think, from a Chiefs, let the Titans win the toss and give the Chiefs the ball.
So
the
let,
first
let, let's say you it take it and you're not leading at the half and you're down three and the Titans slug one in. Mm-hmm. They burn 7 minutes of clock with Derrick Henry. Punch in a touchdown to take a 10-point lead, and you go into the half knowing, yeah, and that big bull is coming right back at us to start the next half because we got to kick off to him. What's the mindset then?
That's a rough deal. But
there's only – did you not listen to Eli Drinkwitz?
I
is that on the cut sheet?
I did. Yes.
Yes, I don't want to steal Lebo's thunder.
I think Todd's going to play more Big 12 stuff.
Okay.
I think.
So let me – We'll break and we'll come back. I don't want to get behind because we got to get to Travis Goff, too. We'll break and come back. I think Eli Drinkwitz did one of the better jobs of explaining why you defer. Right? So how about the defense goes out, gets a stop? You don't take the opening kickoff. You get a stop, then you get the ball, and then you play from in front. How about that?
That works.
Or at least holds them to a field goal and allows your offense to get a touchdown. How about that?
Holding a three, up 7-3, get it back, and then punch it in your 14-3 in your good shape.
Eli Drinkwitz, we'll hear from him coming up when we come back, talking about the swing eight, the golden eight?
Yeah, he called it, he says some people call it one thing, I call it this, and I can't remember which one was which.
Talking about the last 4 minutes of the first half and the first 4 minutes of the second half. It's one of the reasons I think it's clearly part of the philosophy of Andy Reid as well. We'll do that next. We're on the road. We're at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Of course, they are now the proud big brother, I guess you would say, to Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia, now owned and operated by the Robert Brogdon family. Been in business for over 25 years. Hometown roots, proud supporters of local schools, healthcare organizations, food banks, other worthy nonprofits, a true part of our Kansas City community. The fastest growing Kia dealer in Kansas City is Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Make sure you check it out, whether it's here at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC or across the street at Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. You've got the largest selection of new, certified, pre-owned, and used vehicles, all makes, models, and any budget. All new Kia models are backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty and 0% APR financing available on select new Kia models. Check it out right now. You can find them online at olathekia.com. More on the program, we'll hear from Eli Drinkwitz next here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The program with Soren Petro.
There's a guy who hits his name Randy Arozarena. Every time he takes a swing, it is a thing, it's cosa buena. Running around the bases, he's as fast as a hyena. Arozarena. Aye!
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We're at Robert Brogdon's place. I've been, spent actually quite a bit of my life here now that I think about it. We've done quite a few remotes here.
Oh, yeah.
Bought 7 vehicles here. Never too much time. I've never spent as much time buying a car as we do doing the show.
I've bought 2 here.
And that's 4 hours, and I'm going to tell you, I know lots of people that have horror stories of being
at car dealerships for hour after hour after hour. That's not the car buying experience you're going to get at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Come see him today, Robert Brogdon Buick GMC at I-35 and Santa Fe. If you're going to GPS at 1500 East Santa Fe Street, family-owned dealership for 25 years, the GMC Yukon back in stock. Come check them out right now. And, of course, discounts for the military and first responders here at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. I want to let you hear Eli Drinkwitz because he had a situation where he got the ball with, what, 2 minutes or so? Or was it a minute 28? I guess he ended up at minute 28, three timeouts, down 28-7. 10.5, ran some plays, threw it a couple of times, but ended up letting the clock tick off. I had some Tiger fans texting me. I don't know if they want their name out there. Some of them somewhat known to our listeners. But why he wasn't burning the timeouts. Curtis had a chance to ask him on the SEC conference call about his philosophy as far as ending the half and the clock management and using the timeouts.
My general philosophy is depending on how the swing eight is going, which is the last 4 minutes of the first half and the first 4 minutes of the second half, there's really only one time in football, even after turnovers, that you can double up a possession, meaning you get back-to-back possessions without the other team having the opportunity for the football. And that is if you have the ball at the end of the half and then get the ball to start the second half. And that is an opportunity for people to expand leads. And if you look back, usually what happens right before half tends to have an outcome on the game. That's why we call it the swing eight. Some people call it the middle eight. I tend to make sure that the most important thing is that we don't give the ball back to the other team with the opportunity to score points. I think that's very important. There's always 30 minutes to go. There's 30 minutes left in the game. And so if you do something to critically hurt yourself before half, you've really put yourself in jeopardy for the next 30 minutes. Instead, it's not a conservative approach. I think it's just smart football of let's make sure we don't – it's kind of like a doctor. The first thing we need to do is do no harm and then balance the ability to attack downfield.
It's like a doctor, do no harm. I mean, I think you learned a little bit. This is what he did. Again, I think this applies to Andy Reid and his mindset as well. He gets the football, has 123. First and 10, Tyler Beatty run for 6. 102, Tyler Beatty run for 1. 101, I guess he went out of bounds. 101, or no, at 101, timeout Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. So Texas A&M is trying to save time to get another score. He's already down 28-7. Right now, we now know his priority in that moment is not to get a first down, not to score points. It's to make sure that A&M doesn't tack on even more points, right? Connor Bazelak, pass complete to Tyler Beatty for 6 yards to the Missouri 31. It's a first down. That's at 55 seconds, 49 seconds, first and 10. He throws again, 8 yards to the Missouri 39. After that, an incompletion stops the clock at 45 seconds, and then he runs Tyler Beatty for 1 yard. Clock is ticking. They don't have to run a play. They don't run a play, and he gets out of there without it getting worse. My question to you is that the right mindset for him, for Andy Reid? Is that a conservative mindset? Keep in mind, that kind of surprised me because Will Harris called him, as a play caller, aggressive to the point of being reckless.
No, I don't think that's a bad situation. When you know the other team has the ball coming out to start the second, he wants to prevent them from getting that back-to-back. And I think it's also a situation, at least in that game, like where he was with the time he had left, I don't think he thought there's not much of a chance that we're going to turn this into points. What I want to keep from happening is them turning it into points and then getting it back to start.
When I hear his philosophy, I now know that I look at this and say he's got to get a better quarterback, because I think he would have wanted to. He understands the importance of having a chance. Down 28-7, he can score, get the ball back to start the second half and score.
Yeah.
Right? Like in that situation, that's what he could have done. Actually, A&M was getting the ball, but my point being, he could have scored and cut it 28-14.
But his philosophy is still holds, because he's trying to keep. When he said first, do no harm, the harm he's talking about is them getting the ball, scoring, and then getting it back and scoring again.
But if he has a better quarterback, he's not nickel and diming it. He's able to go down the field, get out of harm's way, prevent them from scoring, and then get after getting points himself.
Yep.
I think one of the bigger discussions is going to continue to be when Connor Basilak either gets way better or gets replaced. Let's take a break. Travis Goff, the athletic director of the Kansas Jayhawks, is going to join us. It's Big 12 Basketball Media Days. We'll talk all things KU with the AD of the Jayhawks. Travis Goff is next. We're at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, I-35 in Santa Fe. You can come down, take advantage of 0% APR financing for 72 months. It's on all new Buicks and the GMC Terrain and Acadia models. Get here, I-35 in Santa Fe. That's 1500 East Santa Fe Street. Online, it's robertbrogdon.com.
The program with Soren Petro.
I'm out.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we broadcast live at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, I-35 in Santa Fe. It's where I bought my last 7 vehicles. It's where right now you can take advantage of 0% APR financing for 72 months. It's available on all new Buick models and GMC Terrain and Acadia models. Find them online right now at robertbrogdon.com. We talk some Kansas athletics. It's Big 12 Basketball Media Day. Of course, Jayhawk fans got a great team and are very excited about it. Here with us in the program is Travis Goff, the athletic director for the Kansas Jayhawks. Travis, how are you, sir?
Doing great, Soren. Appreciate the opportunity to join you, and thanks for all your good work.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, and thanks for your time. And how exciting is it to get the basketball season up and running when, shockingly, there are very high expectations for Kansas basketball this year?
Yeah, we like those kinds of expectations. It's just great to be in Kansas City and to be in person, you know, with student-athletes and coaches talking about their programs and their teams. So it's an exciting moment in time, and it's amazing to think that hoops is here.
Yeah, it is, and it's amazing how fast things move. And how has it gone? Like, last year was such a bizarre year. I know you weren't dealing with all of it here at Kansas, but I know it was bizarre for all of athletics, all of sports, really. But the football season, knock on some wood, has gone pretty good in a pandemic environment, and I think it's got to be thrilling to be thinking about a full Allen Fieldhouse.
Yeah, no question. I mean, again, as you said, knock on wood, but thus far, going into the fall now, 5, 6, 7 weeks in, for some, you know, not having major COVID implications, obviously with the student athletes and teams, and certainly with having fuller venues and in some cases really full venues out there, that's been a great thing. I think it bodes well for basketball and being inside. And of course, at KU, that means 16,300, you know, we hope game in and game out at Allen Fieldhouse. So really looking forward to that. And, you know, kind of continuing to bring campuses to life, right? Having homecoming last weekend and seeing Lawrence buzzing with visitors and parents and alumni all back in town and, you know, activating the local businesses and all the good that comes with that. I just think it's great for everybody. And again, certainly here in Kansas City, looking forward to having the tourney here again in March for the Big 12 and all the things that come with that.
And when we talked with Coach Self getting ready for late night, and one of the things we asked him, I'll ask you too, that, you know, it would be nice to be done with the NCAA investigation. Is there any news on a timeline on getting the results of whatever is going to be the situation with that?
Yeah, and, you know, can't say a whole lot there. That's one of the things they've asked of us, and number one. Number two, we don't have really any clear indicators from a timing perspective about what lies ahead. All I know is, to me, every week that goes by, it feels like a step in the right direction. I know after, you know, multiple years of navigating this, it's going to be a great day for everybody, certainly involved in KU, to move forward, to stay locked arm in arm, you know, with Coach Self, with the chancellor, with the entire university. So looking forward to moving past that.
Yeah. All right. Is there any awkwardness around the Big 12 Media Days with Oklahoma and Texas? I mean, we know that bombshell that got dropped over the summer. What's the environment with the members that are staying versus the ones that are leaving?
Yeah, I think most of that is behind us, quite honestly, and I think that's in part just due to timing, right? That there's been some time between, some distance between that announcement of OU and Texas heading to the SEC at some juncture. And then, of course, the Big 12, you know, better stabilizing and significantly stabilizing itself with the, you know, a pretty progressive and aggressive add of the four new members to the league.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say,
I think, and then you take in this another really important benchmark, right, of progress with having Big 12 media days, both for the women and the men. I think the focus can rightfully now turn back to the student athletes and the teams competing, you know, in all the sports across the conference.
Is there an excitement to get to what the league is going to be? Is there a feeling that, you know, speeding up this timeline? I know people have speculated on what Texas and Oklahoma would do. I know the plan is that they're going to be in the league for four more years, but is there an excitement to get to your new partners and get to what the conference is going to be? Is there a want on the league's part? Maybe on just on Kansas. I'll let you just speak for Kansas. On Kansas's part to get to what this league is going to be.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, you know, positivity and optimism around what the new makeup and kind of the, you know, revitalized or reinvented version of the Big 12 is going to look like with these four new ads in BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and Central Florida. So I think there's certainly excitement around that and a degree of eagerness to bring them on board. But we also know that, you know, you only get one chance to kind of onboard new membership. And I think everybody wants to do that right. And, of course, still having a little bit of uncertainty around timing there and timing of OU and Texas's departure. Although we feel in both cases, we've got a couple years of stability and then you bring some new in and at some juncture, Texas and OU cycle out.
I know everybody talks about, we're talking to Travis Goff, the athletic director of the Kansas Jayhawks. And everybody talks about how, you know, oh, football is where all the money is. That's not really the whole story, right? There's a lot of money clearly and very profitable, you know, a program with Kansas basketball and the revenue that it generates and allows your athletic budget to be what it is. It's also, isn't it like, I'm just curious your thoughts when you have this, you know, behemoth of a basketball program. I've had people tell me, hey, there's more money actually in basketball. When you talk about the NCAA tournament, it's all just controlled by the NCAA, where the football monies come down through the leagues to the schools individually. Is there a frustration when you have such a great tradition and history and such a viable basketball program that the economics don't work the same? And is there a want to potentially change that down the road to where Kansas could see more of its actual value? I mean, as great as the revenue stream is for Kansas basketball, a lot of it does remain in the league offices.
Yeah, no, that's actually a really interesting point, and I think a good observation around the differences between football and basketball. I mean, pretty well documented that men's basketball has been in many ways the lifeblood, both financially and then just from an emotional perspective and engagement perspective for the University of Kansas. And goodness, thankful for that because it's been such a critical driver of all things KU. You know, we're excited for a day that football can be a more significant contributor to both those things, both in terms of alumni engagement, fan support, and obviously then the financials that come with it. But football, basketball is where we've really had to hang our hat. And as you indicate, you know, really a significant financial driving force for our budget. So that continues moving forward. And so thankful for what Coach Self and that program has done in that regard. As far as the NCAA goes, you know, it's an interesting dynamic because in some ways we could simplify it, say, hey, shouldn't those dollars be more distributed to those that are driving the majority or the bulk of the value in March Madness? The interesting thing and the difference between football and men's basketball in the postseasons is that March Madness is in so many ways built on that mid-major dynamic and the upsets that come. And so, you know, it forces you to really kind of pause and try and take into account the broader picture and the broader implications of that. And then the other thing that we know, right or wrong, is that the dollars generated through March Madness for the NCAA help fund a lot of other things, including the championships for the other sports that are operated through the NCAA. And then there's a piece of support that goes to Division II and Division III. And that could be, you know, that could be scrutinized, but there's some justification and some, you know, important broader elements with how basketball is structured.
Well, we're talking to Travis Goff, the athletic director of the Kansas Jayhawks here in the program. And Travis, I think people are well aware that you came from Northwestern. And there was a big donation made at Northwestern to upgrade the stadium there. And, you know, I thought it was interesting that here they are, you know, in the Big Ten, all the revenue that comes with the Big Ten network and everything, yet they're putting a lot of money into their stadium. I'm wise enough to know that those things don't happen in like a day or two.
that maybe even it stretches back, that you maybe laid some groundwork and did some of the heavy lifting on getting that thing done, right? That's turning a cruise ship. It doesn't happen overnight to get the kind of commitment that was given there at Northwestern to upgrade the stadium facilities. Is that something that needs to happen with the Kansas Jayhawks and for the football program to continue to grow to where I think everybody feels like it can get to?
It absolutely is a big part of it, you know, and I think just for a minute on the Northwestern piece, I think you referenced a couple things, one of which is, you know, that takes alignment across the university, especially at a place like that, higher academic, smaller private institution. But if you're going to compete in the Big Ten, you better invest in the sport of football and you better, you know, create some success and some momentum. And then the other piece is you can't do it without incredible support from alumni and fans. And that's what that gift indicates from the Ryan family, just amazing people up there supporting Northwestern and being the fuel behind that project. At KU, without a doubt, the football stadium and David Booth Kansas Memorial Football Stadium is a tangible indicator. It's a lived, real part of our indication and commitment to football, right? So if that's one of the critical tangible indicators, we have to look at ways to invest in, you know, the student athlete implications. And then certainly, and at the forefront of stadiums is the fan experience part. And we are obviously not where we want to be in terms of fan experience there, just with some of the limitations. And, you know, this year we celebrate 100 years of Memorial Stadium, which is a pretty neat thing when you think about why that stadium was built and what it honors and recognizes. But it is absolutely going to be an important part of what we need to do going forward is a major study and then major investment in that stadium.
Can you do it? Does football have to win first? This is a little bit of a chicken and the egg thing, right? All the facilities are great to attract kids and everything and to keep coaches happy. But do you have to win football games first? Because that's been one of the things that some people have suggested has to happen.
Well, you know, I'll say this in a couple ways. One is you can't do it without incredible philanthropic support. So you can't do it without success from a fundraising perspective. You can't raise money if your people, your constituents don't believe in the future state and in the build of a football program. So I don't think wins necessarily have to be at the forefront, but I do think an indication that we've got the right people in place, the right head football coach, the right support around the program, and then some indicators of just progress, building upon a foundation that's been, you know, pretty wobbly for some time. And I think we've got a patient support base full of perspective, and they're going to be on board as we continue to show them those other things. And to me, you can't sit back and wait and hope for the wins to be the primary driver of that.
Interesting. We're talking to Travis Goff, the athletic director for the Kansas Jayhawks here in the program. One more question. I know you're busy. I got one more question and then a quick final four for you, and that's this. I had a number of KU people reach out to me when they heard this, so I'll put it to you, right, the guy that stands watch on the program. They heard at Big Ten Media Days the Big Ten commissioner talk about how important basketball is. And he seemed to be – now, listen, I suggested that him. I said, look, the guy may just be playing to his audience. It's basketball media day, right?
But
he did have some very, strong comments about, you know, the importance of basketball. That gave some of your Kansas faithful, at least the several that texted me, the idea that, wow, if they think basketball is that big, Kansas to the Big Ten. Look, I know that's a touchy subject, right? Where does Kansas sit as far as being a part of a vibrant and what is, like, frankly, maybe a better football conference right now, if you check the rankings on some of the members that are coming, being a part of this versus also still being there and having an antenna up and listening to any offers that may come Kansas's way?
Yeah, I mean, I think the statement around basketball is just kind of factual in the sense that, you know, the focal point, rightfully so, of the conference shifting of late has been around football, and that's an accurate representation. Football really does drive a significant, if not the majority, of the value that's out there, of the eyeballs that are tuning in, so to speak. But one of the unique things about KU is we're one of only a handful true blue blood programs that the value in the eyeballs that basketball drives is really unprecedented. And in many ways, the value of this basketball program, you know, would trump many football programs out there. And of course, the formula is to do it both in football and in men's right. basketball. So not to take a thing away from the importance of where we've got to go with football here. I think, you know, if there's any learning from this experience, and I've tried to be real honest about this aspect, which is we learned a lot through the process. And I think every institution did, whether it be in Lawrence or other Big 12 colleagues or places across the country, you really had to look hard in the mirror around what are some of your unique assets or unique value propositions, and then what are the real liabilities that you face in your athletics program. And I think, frankly, the conference piece becomes pretty secondary when you evaluate it in that manner. It's about what does University of Kansas need to do to strengthen itself for what really is an uncertain future around college athletics. So, you know, it'd be naive not to expect more shifting, whether that be broader for the NCAA and certainly potentially in the conference landscape. So I'm excited about what that kind of look in has provided us and really excited about the potential we have going forward.
Travis Goff, the athletic director of the Kansas Jayhawks, is with us. Time for a Final Four brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System has extended weekday hours and a Saturday morning walk-in clinic. You can learn more by going to kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Four quickies, just a couple of words, Travis. I'll start you with this. Why is it the University of Kansas, yet it's called KU?
Gosh, that's that flagship thing. We feel like we're University of Kansas. We've got to lead the charge, and maybe that UK thing was taken by the time we had to latch on to KU. I don't know that for sure.
Okay, all right. Is it possible to make the Jayhawk bigger at Allen Fieldhouse?
No, let's not do that. I love it now, but let's not go bigger.
Okay. Your biggest mentor as an athletic director, who did you learn the most from?
Yeah, that'd be Jim Phillips, the guy I worked under at Northwestern all those years, who's the commissioner of the ACC right now. Great friend, great mentor, both in terms of personal and professional.
Okay, and finally, how often do you actually wave the wheat? I'm just curious. So when you're in a position, do you wake up and wave the wheat immediately first thing that you're stretching to get going in the morning? How often does the athletic director actually wave the wheat?
Yeah, now that you know, here's the fact around that. I try not to waste any of those arm motions unless it's justified. So as you look at our football the last couple few weeks, unfortunately, there has not been enough waving of the wheat, but we're looking forward to more of that to come.
Oh, I think you feel pretty good about where it's going. I think we all feel pretty good about Lance Leipold. I know on my drive home, listen to Hawk Talk, I'm always impressed with Coach Leipold, and I know it's a process, and it never happens as fast as everybody wants. But I think there's a lot to like, and the way they have fought through first halves and into the second half, and you know, you can see that they kind of run out of gas. There's just not quite enough there. But I think you still feel pretty damn good about where that football 100%. Program's going.
We hired him 5.5 months ago. I felt really good then. I feel even better about him now at this juncture in the season with the way this build is going to get done in the right way. So thanks for saying that. And without question, Coach Leipold's the right guy at the helm at KU.
You bet. Travis Goff, athletic director of the Kansas Jayhawks. Thanks so much for your time, Travis. We appreciate it. We'll talk again down the road.
Appreciate you, Soren. Thanks so much for making time today. Rock off.
Time for our Deli Fresh end of the hour question, sponsored by Good Sense. Chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense, not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, the Astros scored 7 runs in the 9th inning last night. What team holds the postseason record for runs scored in a single inning? Brought to you by Good Sense.